Okay. We actually, for committee day, this is really great. We're on time for all committees. This might be a first for us. So anyway, let's call the meeting the Finance Audit Compliance Facilities and Operations Committee. Ms. Doe, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Here.
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz.
Here.
Trustee James Innes.
Here.
Board Chair Montel Gales. Committee Vice Chair Leland Strom.
Here.
Committee Chair Dennis Bersima.
Here. Thank you very much. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You have a quorum present and appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as proposed?
So made, Drum.
Is there a second?
Second, Wasowitz.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The agenda meeting, the meeting agenda is approved. Review and approval of the minutes from our last meeting of August 28th, 2025. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved, Gales.
Thank you very much. Is there a second?
Second, Strom.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes of August 28th, 2025 are approved. Item number five, chair's comments and announcements. Before we get to the chair's comments, I would like to invite any members of the University Advisory Committee who are present here today to speak. Do any of you have comments for the board?
Once again, we do not.
Okay, thank you very much. So good morning. Today's agenda includes several updates on our financials. Four recommendations, which will include the fiscal year 2027 appropriations request to the state of Illinois, and a short presentation on the status of the Boster Bowell Health Technology Center project. So with that, we will move on to item number six, public comment, which at this point we wish to recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and the Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board. Mr. Perry, have you received any timely request to address this meeting?
Mr. Chair, we have no public comment this morning.
Okay, thank you very much. We roll right along. At this point in time, we're move to item number seven, the financial update. And I will turn it over at this point in time to Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Dr. George Middlemist, to present the university financial update. George, I will turn 7A over to you.
Thank you, Trustee Bersima. Agenda item 7A is the annual financial summary as of June 30, 2025. Overall, the university ended the fiscal year with an operating deficit of $18.6 million. When recurring and non-recurring revenues and expenses are considered, this represents a significant improvement over the fiscal year 24 budgeted deficit of $30.4 million. But is $3.2 million higher than the targeted deficit of $15.4 million. In addition to the overall financial performance, the university measures recurring financial performance to ensure the long financial sustainability of the campus. The intent of the recurring financial summary is to create a budget framework capable of anchoring multi-year planning and budgeting. Through this focus on recurring revenues and expenses, a forward-looking understanding of resources and commitments can be leveraged for multi-year planning. The full year recurring net revenue was $3.9 million unfavorable to budget, caused by revenues underperforming budget by $4.2 million, or 1%. Total non-recurring financial performance for fiscal year 25 was more closely aligned to budget with a slight favorability of $200,000. Analysis of the variance between FY25 projections and FY25 performance is being used by the university to improve the fiscal year 26 deficit mitigation strategies and accountability, as well as improve budgeting and financial decision making. For example, the university implemented additional rigorous financial monitoring and control practices, such as quarterly divisional budget check-in meetings beginning in fiscal year 26. These meetings will increase support for divisional budget concerns and, most importantly, leverage insights gained to proactively align overall financial performance to a balanced budget or a budget surplus. Accurate alignment will also be supported by divisional level projection tools designed by the university to improve projection processes. We continue enhancing the strategic budget process for fiscal year 27, which is being launched 6 months earlier than prior budgeted processes to allow for more time to address the university's budget challenges. Lastly, we are finalizing plans to adopt shared services models, which will be implemented in the second half of fiscal year 26 on a timeline that considers service efficiency and budget impact. And that's my update.
Great, thank you. So the good news is we reduced the budget deficit by approximately $12 million on a year-over-year basis. So that's great. We're going in the right direction. The bad news is we missed the forecast. When this board left and when the university left fiscal year 25, the expectation at that time of everybody who sits at this table was that we were actually going to meet or even beat the budget forecast for fiscal year 25, which was approximately 14.9 million loss. And as you just heard George say, we came in at a loss of 18.6 million. So you ask yourself the question, why did we miss the budget? Why did we miss the forecast? The board gave a mandate to the senior administration of NIU several years ago that we have to get to break even, right? We have to have a balanced budget. That mandate stays in place today, even stronger today than even maybe 2 years ago. I think in looking at why we missed on our forecast is because communication in meeting a budget is everything. All departments, all colleges, athletics have to be in sync with George and his team in recognizing where we're at on the revenue side, and if we're missing on the revenue side, understand it in time to make the changes that we need to make on the expense side. It makes no sense for us to spend to a revenue forecast that we don't meet. And that, in essence, is what happened in fiscal year 25 in a nutshell, right? If you look at the expense forecast that we had, we basically made the expense forecast last year, the expense budget. We missed on the revenue side by approximately 4.6 million. So how do we move forward? Because what happened, happened. We need to learn from it. Right? I'm a big believer in have a small rear view mirror because we always want them to be looking forward, but we need to have a rear view mirror to say what happened, why did it happen, and what are we going to learn from it? And I think the biggest takeaway for the board is that communication with finance and accounting and all of the various departments, as I said before, athletics, the colleges, staff, has got to be such that we are all working in sync. And we all know far enough in advance that we're not meeting the revenue number, the sales number, if you will, in this particular case. I mean, we missed the sales line by 4.3 million. That's almost the entire miss on the revenue side. So we need to understand in time so we can make the appropriate changes, the appropriate corresponding changes on the expense side. Does that make sense? Right. And we need everybody's help in doing that. As I said at the very beginning of my comments, the mandate to get to a balanced budget remains in place very strongly. And we all have to support Dr. Freeman, George, the rest of the senior administration team that's working hard, you know, to get to this point. We all have to support each other in making sure that we're cooperating and communicating with each other, and we're all pulling on the same rope at the same time, in the same direction, with the same strength. And we will get there. I have no doubt that we will get there. Getting a balanced budget in fiscal year 26 is the utmost priority for us, right? And we're going to talk about that next in the agenda, right? Because we now have some visibility into the first quarter for fiscal year 26. Now, the good news, right, for fiscal year 26 is with enrollment. Great job. I mean, we did an amazing job on enrollment. That's going to help us considerably on the revenue side, right? But we need to ensure that revenues match expenses. Expenses match revenue. And we've got to get better. There's no other way to say this. We've got to get better in forecasting our revenue. We just do, right? And that responsibility doesn't lie just in one place. It lies in many places across campus, right? So working together, extremely important. So with that, we can move on. Agenda item 7B. Yeah, thanks very much. I appreciate that. So this is nothing to vote on, but do we have any questions or comments on behalf of the board? Sorry, I got carried away there. Yeah, Lee.
Thank you, Chair Barsima. As the vice chair of this committee and working with Dennis and the staff on this issue over the last 30, 60 days, as we became fully aware of this situation, I just want to reiterate that we realize that moving from last year's $30 million plus deficit to the goal this year of 15, and now the miss of $3 million, while significant, we also realize that a lot of you and a lot of the leadership in this at this university have sacrificed a lot in this goal. While these are can be viewed as short-term goals, they have long-ranging impacts over time at the university. And we greatly appreciate the efforts that so many of you have put forth with the university leadership over the course of the last year to get to this point. We have examined and continue to examine the details of this so that we can fully understand and ensure that the proper pieces are being put in place to reach that goal of the balanced budget in fiscal year 26 and then beyond. And as Dennis mentioned, you know, obviously the enrollment number helps in this process, and hopefully this year's enrollment bump is a start of a new trend at the university here. So I just want to reiterate that we understand the difficult nature of this. We realize the sacrifices that have been put forward, but we remain committed to getting this to the balanced budget. And again, we are addressing the proper pieces to put in place and the monitoring to ensure that that occurs over the next year.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? We good? Okay. We will move on to agenda item 7B.
Agenda item 7B is the quarterly financial summary for fiscal year 2026 as of September 30, 2025. The first quarter of fiscal year 26 update provides a disaggregated view of NIU's budget and its financial performance, consistent with the format used when the Board of Trustees adopted the fiscal year 26 budget in June. In addition to presenting multiple views of the budget, this financial summary also provides an update on the FY26 budget itself. As noted in June, ongoing budget development activities in the first quarter of the fiscal year drove some adjustments to the revenue and expense categories with zero net impact. While it is early in the fiscal year, we are currently projecting a deficit of nearly $2 million and fully acknowledge that this is unacceptable. While multiple numbers are impacting this, I want to point out that a major factor in the projected deficit is the state appropriation. We originally budgeted an increase in appropriated operating funds of approximately $3 million or 3%. We are no longer anticipating this level of increase given the fiscal challenges that the state is facing and have decreased this projection by $2 million to reflect only a 1% increase. As a community, we need to continue to be mindful of how we are using our available budget to ensure that we are remaining student-centric, academically responsive, and fiscally responsible. Currently, we are performing behind budget in personnel, sales, travel, and miscellaneous. This is partially because our increased enrollment required immediate additional investment in instructors and support. Going forward, we need to continue to focus on mission-critical priorities while realigning revenues and expenses to produce a balanced fiscal year 26 budget. This will require increased efficiency and a strong fiscal discipline, including rigorous position and spending controls.
And I'm good. Thank you. So as we talked about before, the wind behind our sails, right, all revolves around enrollment. Right now, I mean, we had an amazing fall because we have an amazing university, and so we are off to a great start from a revenue standpoint. You know, we talked about this some months ago that, you know, one of the many reasons, right, it's important for us to have a balanced budget, and I hope by now most of you, if not all of you, have been hearing about, you know, the issues on other campuses around the country, and that so many other universities, many prestigious ones, right, are having serious issues with budget. And we are fortunate that we got out in front of this. And so we deal with an issue right now of a $2 million gap caused by the state informing us that we likely were not going to get all of the increase in the appropriations that we anticipated when we built the fiscal year 26 budget. We can overcome that. I have great confidence that we will overcome that as a campus community. But we talked about not everything in life is going to be in our control. And we have to be prepared for things that aren't in our control that come our way. And the best way that we can do that is to have a balanced budget and to be nimble. But again, I reiterate, it goes back to, as we close this gap, I'm not going to call a $2 million gap a small gap, but it's a relatively manageable gap. As we close this gap, it's going to take everybody communicating and working together. And as my co-chair said before, we know and appreciate the efforts that everybody has been doing to get us to this point. Thank you. We don't get to where we are today without the effort of everybody and the sacrifices of everybody on this campus. And we are well aware of all the sacrifices that have been made. And we appreciate it and we thank you. But we still have some work left to do. And we all have to work together in order to get that done. We can't have one organization. We can't have everybody cooperating in one organization that goes rogue, right? And doesn't play as a part of the team. And we wind up at the end of the year missing our budget again, right? We can't have that. We all have to be together. We all have to be together, okay? So with that, I'll turn it back over to you. Or any questions that we have. Eric.
So this is probably a question for George. In our, I mean, state appropriations is state appropriations. You know, that's kind of out of our control. But the things we can't control, and the one that looks out of line the most is this main bucket called sales. So I'm not looking for this today, but maybe in the next, you know, month or two, if we can get a breakdown of what sales means, because sales is a lot of different things. So if we could just get a breakdown of that, and that's one of the things that feeds in, and that's the area where, on the top line, we're missing the most.
Absolutely.
We can certainly go from there. The expense stuff is in our, for the most part, is in our control.
We can do that.
But we got 10 or 11 departments that we need to, you know, work on here. I applaud you for the work that we're doing on this. But, yeah, we got to buckle down. But sales breakout would be great. Thank you.
Other questions, comments?
Just a comment. I want to give a special thanks to you and to Trustee Strom and your leadership on the Finance Committee and your constant message of budget responsibility, fiscal responsibility. And it's, I want everyone to know that it's all shared by every one of us on this board.
I know, I'm a pain in the ass, okay? And I don't want to be, I really don't. I mean, I told Rita, I said, I look forward to being in a committee meeting where you're all having fun. I hear about the fun they're having in these committee meetings. And I want to get there, but thank you, I appreciate it. Okay. You know, the last thing that I'll add to Eric's point on sales, being in sales and having a sales and marketing background and ran sales organizations, I know how difficult it can be to forecast sales, right? Which makes it even more important that we have the right processes in place, right? That we have the right processes in place in order to allow us to forecast sales on a timely basis, so that if there is a need to adjust spending, we can make that adjustment in time, right, to not have it impact us in a negative way. So sales is extremely important. It's I mean, when you look at the budget line of a $17.2 million budget on a $400 million budget, right, it seems relatively small, but it's really, really, really important, right, because it's one of those things that we just have to get good at forecasting and doing it in a timely way. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you. For agenda item 7C.
Agenda item 7C is a periodic report of cash and investments for period ending September 30th, 2025, and contains two schedules that are presented quarterly, the cash and investments holding summary and the investment earnings report. The cash and investments holding summary of September 30, 2025 shows NIU's total holdings at just over $121 million. Of the total holdings balance, approximately $37 million is related to the 2024 tax-exempt energy efficiency financing. Approximately $37 million is available for daily operations. These two numbers are the same, but they're not the same. So I just wanted to point that out. So they just happen to both be $37 million. So our unrestricted cash is $37 million, providing approximately 28 days of cash on hand based on historical burn rate of $1.3 million a day. The remaining funds are restricted due to collateralization, escrow, and contractual obligations tied to auxiliary and commercial card programs. It is important to note that the university's cash flow is cyclical, typically peaking in September following the receipt of fall tuition and state appropriations, then declining through the remainder of the semester as expenses begin to exceed receipts. Timing differences in receipts also affect one year-over-year comparisons, including $19 million of MAP funds that were received a quarter earlier in fiscal year 26 as compared to fiscal year 25. Operating cash balances are anticipated to decline through December, prior to the collection of spring tuition. The investment earnings report shows income of $1 million and an overall annualized rate of return of 4.27% for the first quarter. This represents an increase of approximately $44,000 when compared to the same quarter in fiscal year 25. The increase in interest earned is primarily due to the increase in total cash and investments holdings because of the project funds held in connection with the energy efficiency project. As stated earlier, we need to continue to manage our original budgeted expenses. This will ensure that we begin to enhance our cash position and rebuild our financial foundation.
Thank you. Again, thank you to all for the work that you've done. It's very much noticed and very much appreciated by the board. Cash, you know, we talk a lot about we talk a lot about a balanced budget, job one. But what comes with a balanced budget is a balanced cash flow, right? And so as we turn the corner and we get a balanced budget for fiscal year 26, and I've got confidence that as we move forward in the fiscal year 27, 28, 29, we'll start to show profit, right? Ideally, we'll start to show profit. But as we start to get to at least a balanced budget, we start to now not see our cash deplete, right? And we can now start to get to balanced cash flow, which is, you know, job one, balanced budget, job 1A or 1B, you know, balanced cash flow. And we're so close. We are so close, right? We can see it, right? And we're going to get there. I know we're going to get there. So thank you for all the work that you're doing. And any questions? I'm sorry, Dr. Freeman?
Take trustee questions first, but I was just going to ask for permission to insert something before we do the next one.
Sure, absolutely.
But take the questions.
Go ahead. Lee?
Just a quick question for George. The 28 days cash on hand, and that amount included the early MAP funds that came in?
That's correct.
So with that, and we'll reach the low point
December.
How close is that going to get? I mean, that days on hand number is going to dwindle.
Yes.
How close do we get to zero?
We're watching it really closely. First, we're working with the controller's office to change the timing of appropriations. It will get close. We anticipate that we'll stay positive, and we're working really, really hard behind the scenes with the controller's office to ensure that we get timely receipt of the state appropriation dollars. And then cash will start to rebuild in January, February, and we anticipate ending the year with a positive cash balance.
The reason I asked the question, and it references back to Chair Barsima's comments, I mean, we watch this as trustees, obviously, very closely, too, because to me it is extremely important that we do not let the day's cash number get
minus.
Yes. Even hopefully not zero.
Yes.
So, okay, thank you.
Other questions, comments from the board? Dr. Freeman?
Thank you, Trustee Barsima. You've heard from George that we have a firm commitment as a university to a balanced fiscal year 26 budget. And I just wanted to say on behalf of the university and the entire executive leadership team, and even more than that, our shared governance leaders and the entire university community, that we appreciate that the board understands that this is an amazing university, that we do great service to students, and we share the commitment to a balanced budget, a structurally balanced budget in fiscal year 26 and beyond, because it's too important for this university to continue to be here in a sustainable fashion, to rebuild our cash reserves, and to be able to do the innovative things that we want to do going forward. I also want to call attention to some of the words that were in the item. You know, we say so often that we're committed to a budget that's academically responsive and fiscally responsible, and to setting our priorities in a way that centers students. But even though we say those words a lot, they are not just words. And as we correct in fiscal year 26 budgeting, and as we plan for fiscal year 27, which is, you know, a segue to the next item, I want to say that across every division of the university, the vice presidents are working with the folks who report to them and the members across their divisions to rebuild those budgets in ways that center students, that eliminate things that we can stop doing or that are peripheral to our mission. And that comes from a love of this university and an understanding that fiscal responsibility means having a balanced budget, rebuilding our cash reserves, and being there for the long term. So you are not being a pain. You are being a trustee in the true sense of the word. You are fulfilling your fiscal responsibility to the university, and we're there with you.
Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate that. Okay, we will now, if there's no further comment, we'll move on to agenda item number 8, university recommendations. George, would you like to present item 8A?
Agenda item 8A is the fiscal year 2027 appropriations request. Each year, staff seeks Board of Trustees approval for the overall level of state funding request for the upcoming fiscal year 27. The amount is recognized as the university's formal budget request through the State of Illinois budget development process, including submissions to the Illinois Board of Higher Education, the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Staff also uses this request when developing the university's detailed internal budget for FY27 and other budgetary reports requested from the Illinois General Assembly. For fiscal year 27, Northern Illinois University requests base operating funding of $129.7 million. An additional $850,000 is requested to support new initiatives specified below. The total operating and initiative funding requested is $130.6 million. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting on November 13, 2025.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve Agenda Item 8A?
So made, Strum.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Wasowitz.
Thank you. Is there any comments or discussion? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda Item 8A is approved. Agenda Item 8B.
Agenda Item 8B is the fiscal year 2027 IBHE capital budget request. The Illinois Board of Higher Education capital budget request is submitted in October prior to the budget year in order to meet IBHE and state capital project review and approval submission schedules. The capital budget request consists of two principal categories of projects requesting state funding support and a third category that provides notification of anticipated non-instructional projects that may require specific approval. Aside from the active Bostrup-Bowell Health Technology Center project, there are nine capital projects totaling approximately $641 million and 21 capital renewal projects totaling approximately $196 million. Requests for state funding include regular capital projects, which represent major modernization investments involving new construction or whole building renovation efforts, and capital renewal projects, which represent major repairs and system improvement projects, which are not feasible to support within existing NIU funding resources. Capital renewal priorities are predominantly driven by building infrastructure conditions and the potential for impacting university operations. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting on November 13th, 2025.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve Agenda Item 8B?
So moved, Gales.
Is there a second?
Second, Strum.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? We'll go to Montel first and then we'll go to you, Rita.
I just wanted to ask if this is realistic. I mean, if we're going to be able to, what portion of this do you think that we'll actually receive?
I feel like I need to ask Matt to respond, but I think I can handle it. So I don't want to say it's an academic exercise, right? We would never get anything if we don't ask. You don't get what you don't ask for, right? If you, are we likely to get it? You know, in years when state funding is going to be challenging, and I think state funding this year is going to be a challenge, there is actually oftentimes opportunities for one-time investments and things. And so, you know, maybe for some of the one-time projects, there might be an opportunity for funding. I don't want to be a Pollyanna and overly optimistic, but, you know, I think there's opportunities, Chair Gales. We don't get a lot of what we ask for, but again, if you don't ask, you will definitely not get it.
You know, I would make the comment at one point in time, the health technology building was on this list.
Yes.
Right. And we got that funding from the state. And then, of course, our great donors came along to help. So it does happen. Other questions, comments, Rita?
My question was similar to Trustee Gales, but on the overall appropriations request, you know, when we talk about the budget and trying to make sure that we're in line, I guess it's realistic, you know, asking again how realistic it is, but it seems like we put a lot of credence that this will happen and therefore our budget will be in line.
It's capped at
So in terms of the total budget request, again, you know, I don't want to say it's an academic exercise, right? You know, we put a lot of thought into what it is that we need from the state and a contribution to support the university. Last year, we got $100 million with the 1% increase from the state. $129 or $130 million is unlikely to be funded. But I also think it's really, really important that, the university continues to show the state that not funding institutions of higher education are specifically in this request. Every year you don't do that, it creates a larger gap to be able to fund. And so we won't build the budget based on a $130 million request. We'll build the budget on actually a flat state appropriation.
Okay.
We won't assume, our positive outlook is that we won't get cut, that we'll stay flat. That's what we'll build the budget on. And that's what we tend to build the budget on every year. So we try and be as conservative as possible. But we also, I also think it's really, really important that we show that every year, you know, every year the state doesn't fund to the commitment that they have said they need to. It becomes more challenging. The gap grows, and it doesn't grow a little bit. It grows significantly. So that's part of the intent of this request.
Can I add to that?
I agree with everything George said. I think budgeting to a flat appropriation is the scenario that we will need to go forward with. But in addition to just constantly illustrating the shortfall between the funding we need and the funding we get, having this level of detail in our appropriation requests supports our advocacy efforts with the state. We will have a bill coming forward that reminds the state that no public university is adequately funded and that the ones that serve that deliver the most effectively on their public mission, NIU included, are funded at just about half of what they need to meet their students' needs. But also going through the exercise, for example, of figuring out what we need for initiatives focused on first-generation students or a summer bridge program, which is an effective practice that we know would help our students' success, that we just, it gives us the bones for others to advocate on our behalf and for us to use to seek funds from sources other than the state, like foundation funding, private foundation funding. So I think from the standpoint of having a document that lays it out, that can be used by our advocates, that can be used by us to advocate, it's a useful exercise, albeit not one with a lot of hope for the number asked.
Okay, thank you. Thank you both for those thoughtful answers.
Other questions or comments? Okay. Hearing none, let's see, we've had a motion, we've had a second, we've had discussion. So all those in favor of agenda item 8B, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda item 8B is passed. Agenda item 8C.
Agenda item 8C is public safety radio connectivity and equipment. The Department of Public Safety is seeking to enter into a multi-year agreement up to 5 years with a single vendor to provide upgraded public safety hardware, portable radios, related systems hardware, dispatch and portable radio connectivity, ongoing maintenance, monitoring, upgrades, and technological support. That was a long sentence. The goal is to encompass timely equipment refreshes, all necessary supporting software, and routine maintenance and upgrades into a single procurement. This approach aims to enhance communication efficiency with partner agencies while reducing overall financial impact compared to managing multiple separate agreements. Over the maximum 5-year term, anticipated spend is to not exceed $850,000. Currently, the contract is directly with Motorola Solutions for dispatch connectivity and equipment and uses the State of Illinois contract with Motorola Solutions for portable radio connectivity, which is an approved vendor under the IPEC agreement. The current contract ends this fiscal year. Preliminary discussions indicate that the most cost-effective solutions for radio connectivity and equipment, including options from Motorola, are structured over longer terms, potentially up to 5 years. Procurement strategies are being explored and early approval is being sought to streamline the process once the optimal path forward is determined. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 11th, 2025.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8C? Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8C?
So move, Wasowitz.
Is there a second? Is there any discussion or questions? I'll start. So I assume, is this going to have an impact on the fiscal year 26 budget, or is this, because you said the current contract runs through this fiscal year, so will this impact this year's budget at all?
It will not impact this year's budget.
Okay, so this is an FY27 budget item, and I assume that this equipment is being used by our police department?
Yes.
Okay. Eric?
So what's the increase on this then? Is it, we're going to 850 over 5 years? So
I actually don't believe that there's an increase, Eric. I think it's staying relatively consistent with prior years.
Wow, okay. All right. And then from a competitive standpoint, I know Motorola is the kind of the gold standard with that. Have we looked at others on this?
So that's will be part of this process, is to look at other solutions to see what the best solution is for the best price. And so Motorola is an IPEC vendor, but we'll continue to pursue other paths to see what would be the right one. What you're giving is for us to begin that process, to find that right vendor and enter into that agreement.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And the chief is nodding yes. So that means I did that okay.
Our new chief. So yes. Welcome.
Congratulations.
Yes. Congratulations, chief.
I'm curious, you know, we're under attack with MBE and WBE programs across the state. The federal government's under attack for its DBE, AC-DBE programs. Are we still working with these vendors to ensure that minority and women have an opportunity to participate on contracts like this?
Yes.
Other questions, comments? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of agenda item 8C, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 8C is passed. Agenda item 8D.
Agenda item 8D is the approval of comprehensive Barbary agreement. The College of Law is seeking approval to enter into a comprehensive agreement with Barbary to provide law students with academic success tools, bar preparation resources, and data analytics support. The agreement includes services for students at all stages of their JD program. The College of Law has utilized Barbary services to enhance the program of legal education since 2015. These services have included an annual Early Start bar preparation course, complete with individualized feedback, access to the Adapti Bar for first-time takers, and access to the Adapti Bar for retakers for our second, third, and fourth-time takers. The Early Start course and the Adapti Bar course are part of this new agreement. Currently, there are no other competitors who offer the combination of services covered by this contract. Barbary is the sole source for the combination of products offered in the contract. The agreement also includes resources for faculty, including professor-only question banks, course materials and online course platforms, and grading services for Early Start bar preparation and low-performing first-year students. The term of this contract is 4 years and will cost approximately $1.1 million, which will be paid via the academic excellence fee, which is funded by student fees. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 11th, 2025.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8D?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion or comments? Rita?
Just quickly, do we periodically do a survey of the students to find out their satisfaction level with these types of courses?
Dean Hill is here, and I'm going to ask if Dean Hill could maybe answer that question, because if I answer it, I would be just making stuff up.
Okay.
So given our rather small size in our law school community, we are engaged and in touch with students as they're studying for the bar every single year.
Okay.
And our bar director, who teaches a supplemental course, is in mm-hmm. touch with the students. So when they received word about the possibility of this contract, they were overjoyed. Okay. Because the majority of our students already take Barbary.
Mm-hmm.
So this helps them with their study, because what we don't want are students who choose between paying for these things and not. Mm-hmm. And that was happening too often.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? John?
So in the category of what is this? This is essentially a preparation mechanism.
John, is your mic on?
So this is essentially a preparation mechanism that students would have normally purchased on their own, and we're bringing it into the law school as a something that they can, from the very beginning, participate in. From an equity standpoint, everybody then has access to it.
Correct. So we hope that every student purchases a bar preparation course on their own, so this is helping in that regard. Plus, it's an enhancement of our academic offerings, because they will receive services pre-1L year and every year thereafter. So they'll have access to the suite of West resources and treatises and things that cost a huge amount that many of our students just simply can't afford. And it allows us to have a package where we get a discount as an institution on a number of these items. So yes.
And so in the status quo right now, they don't get any money towards this. This comes out of their own pocket?
Yes, correct. Now, some things we do purchase as a law school, like access to certain library subscriptions, but we're getting a discount through this overall package. So yes, every student has to pay their own bar prep course, usually.
Okay. Thank you.
When you say Eric? When you say West, you talking about Westlaw?
West academic, the publication side, not necessarily the side for research, okay. But books and other treatises and other services. They're all on
okay, umbrella. Okay.
Barbary owns West.
Mm-hmm. Bringing back a lot of memories.
Okay. Any further questions,
also,
Montel?
This also supports students who did not pass the bar and they.
We, unlike many law schools, we stay with our students until they pass. That's our commitment. And Adapt-A-Bar is one of those resources that we're able to offer to students who may unfortunately not pass the first time on the bar exam. So we receive emails from them or calls saying, can I still get access to Adapt-A-Bar? And we're happy to be able to say, yes, you can.
I'm just curious, now that you've raised it, what percentage of our students have passed the bar exam?
So, you know, post-COVID, we've been experiencing kind of a wave up and down. There are a number of reasons that students have struggled to pass the bar exam. We have hit around this past July 65%, which we know they can do a lot better, and we know with this contract in particular they will. We've seen the evidence and the data of it at other schools, at peer schools in Illinois as well. One school in particular who entered this contract with Barbary just a year ahead of us went up 14 points in their bar pass rate.
Wow. Yeah, I assume we weren't at 100%, or we probably wouldn't be having this discussion. So.
We're typically, you know, at least 80%.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had some challenges since COVID. Our students, you know, unlike many other students nationally, it's a lot, you know, going on.
Yeah. Other questions, comments? Okay, thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Good seeing you. Okay, if there's no other discussion, we will move to approving agenda item 8D. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 8D. Oh, I'm sorry. And show that Chair Gales abstains.
We need a roll call vote.
We need a roll call vote then, yeah.
Give me just a second. Trustee Rita Athes?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee James Innes?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
Board Chair Montel Gales?
Abstain.
Committee Vice Chair Leland Strom?
Yes.
Committee Chair Dennis Barsima?
Yes. The motion is passed. Okay, we'll move now to agenda item 9, University Reports. And George, I'll turn it back over to you.
NIU board regulations stipulate that the university presents regular summaries of designated activities, including financial and property transactions, as well as confirmation that state and federal requirements are met. Today, we have four written items and a presentation with an update on the Bostert-Bowell Health Technology Center and are submitted in accordance with board regulations. I invite John Heckman, Associate Vice President for Facilities Management and Campus Services, to present the updated report. After John's presentation, I'm happy to answer any questions on the written items.
I am just facilitating for other speakers that know more about this project, so I'm going to stand by.
Means we're not going to talk about boilers?
No.
I'll make sure not to. Morning, everyone. We are here today to give you a long-awaited update on the BBHTC project. My name is Belinda Roller, the Director of NIU Architectural Engineering Services, and with me to speak on the project through the lens of the academic programs is Dean Kelly Fiala from the College of Health and Human Sciences. Joining us remotely today from Philadelphia is Luis Vildostigui. Hopefully you can see him. He's the principal in charge from the SLAM Collaborative. Luis is the design team leader to our project. Originally planned to be here in person, he was unable to join us due to the current flight delays and cancellations that are ongoing across the country. Lastly, I also want to acknowledge a few other people who are important to the project, but not presenting. Kenneth Watkins and Michael Klepich are our CDB project managers. They were hoping to be present here today, but weren't able to make, but I think they're listening online. And then, of course, Liberty Turner, our internal architect and project manager, working on the project alongside SLAM and CDB. Liberty. Next slide, please. Oh, sorry, next slide, please, again. Okay. As a recap, this project was originally initiated by the CDB in March of 2021 following state confirmation of $77 million of allocated funds for the project back in 2020. At that time, an RFP process to select a design team began. The SLAM Collaborative, an award-winning national firm, along with their team of subconsultants, including Halliburton Root, a local Chicago-based design firm, were selected to work on the project with us. Luis from SLAM will be running through the design update with you today in a few minutes. Our last major Board of Trustees update was back in August of 23, and at that time we had wrapped up the program analysis phase of the project. That phase was focused on defining the space needs and desired goals for the project, including preliminary cost estimating. The budget was extremely tight, and so at conclusion of that phase, we had settled on base must-have program, but then also outlined additional program that we preferred to include if additional funding could be secured. We have had some delays along the way in the overall process, but the CDB has more recently been actively working with us to get our project moving along again. Schematic design began in April 24 with focus on the base program, but still with the additional preferred program elements in mind. In fall of 24, we received wonderful news that the foundation had been able to find a very generous donor, securing the largest single donation in NIU's history of $40 million. A transformational gift to support the Health Technology Center, Health Sciences Education and Research, of which $10 million is designated for capital costs to directly support the construction of the building itself, $14.8 million for a facility endowment maintenance fund, and $13.1 million to support future programmatic developments. With this added infusion, schematic design for the building from this point to be known as the Bostert-Bowell Health Technology Center, or BBHTC for short, acknowledging the JTB Family Foundation donor. It continued and wrapped up in September of this year with final documentation to submit to CDB for review, including an updated cost estimate. CDB have completed the review, and we are now ready to proceed into final design development. At this time, with the updated cost estimate in hand, it was concluded in consultation with CDB that an additional funding request should be submitted to the state from funding earmarked to provide relief to signature state university projects that were having budget concerns due to lengthy planning delays and significant construction cost escalations over the past several years. A request for $24 million to offset escalations and outages, overages, as well as to allow for inclusion in some energy sustainability features that will contribute significantly towards the overall environmental sustainability of the facility was submitted in August. That was a long sentence, sorry. The additional funding was confirmed by GOMB and CDB in September, and we are excited to proceed forward from here to final design development. The information and imagery that Luis will be showing you today is based on the conclusion of schematic design phase that is wrapped up in September. Next slide, please. Originally envisioned as a 130,000 square foot facility, with the passing of several years since the budget was set by the state, our borrowing power was severely impacted, which is why, from the beginning of the design process with SLAM, overall square footage was significantly reduced to ensure we could stay within the allotted budget of $77 million. This took us down from 130,000 square feet to 87,000 square feet, which represented a 33% drop. The $10 million infusion allowed transformational support of project and health programs, including allowing us to think through with the college, incorporating some key additional program needs, bringing the footprint back up to 94,000 square feet. Dean Fiala is here with us to speak to the positive impact to academic programs overall with the building program, including the benefits with the added program elements that were worked through in schematic design. Kelly?
Thank you. I'm excited to share some of the highlights in the academic story behind BBHDC before Luis dives into the specifics. So thanks to the added funding, we were able to expand the clinic space, and that's allowing us the opportunity to pursue offering nurse practitioner and dietetic services in the facility. It also is giving us an opportunity to consider applying for clinical trials on site with the expanded evaluation rooms. We've also added more classrooms than originally planned. And while classroom instruction isn't the main focus, these spaces let students more seamlessly transition between class and clinical rotations or their labs or simulations. Another big opportunity was with interprofessional education. It was fun to see our nursing, nutrition, physical therapy, speech language pathology, audiology, and others request shared spaces like a home health suite and a demo kitchen, which will let students from multiple disciplines collaborate to provide exceptional patient care. We're enhancing pre-professional programming too. The new gross anatomy lab and virtual anatomy lab will give students the opportunity for ongoing hands-on experience that will help them connect foundational knowledge to clinical practice throughout their career at NIU. The BBHTC will also include biomedical engineering labs, digital visualization spaces, and research areas. And these spaces support student learning and faculty scholarship, helping transdisciplinary research across the university. And finally, expanded student success spaces provide areas for tutoring, group study, and professional socialization, supporting students both academically and professionally.
Thanks, Kelly. So with the additional $24 million funding confirmed by the state, we can now proceed through final design development, maintaining the desired footprint of program spaces and incorporating a geothermal exchange HVAC system and solar photovoltaic array into the overall building design. The geothermal and solar elements, along with other energy conservation measures, all contribute towards reducing the carbon footprint for the building. Aiming for LEED Gold minimum, this sets us up to be in line with the university's strong commitment to sustainability. It should be noted that we are still 6 to 8 months away from contractor bidding. Having $10 million donor funding alongside the state funding provides a good contingency cushion to ensure we get the building that we need. Aside from bricks and mortar type costs, this funding will be critical in ensuring that the building and associated academic programs are outfitted with state-of-the-art equipment and well set up to ensure student success. And now I'm going to turn over to Luis to take us through the fun part of the presentation. Luis?
No pressure, I guess, huh? Well, good morning, everyone. I I apologize in advance for the awkwardness of my having to do this virtually. I am sorry that I don't have the chance to meet all of you in person. Well, Dean Fiala has outlined what's in the building and its impact educationally. Let me quickly try to tell you a little bit more about what's housed in the building in terms of the spaces and how these are organized. This is a little diagram that we've been maintaining throughout, the rainbow stack. The version on the left shows you in bright colors different components of the program and the amount of space allocated to each. But of course, your eye is going to wonder what's in that gray area. So before I describe the building, the areas that are described in bright colors, these are net square footages. And the best way to describe it, the room you're in, the extent of the carpet, that usable area is the net area. That gray bit of the tower is everything else that makes the building stand and function and deliver services. So it's the thickness of the walls, it's the corridors for circulation, it's elevators and stairs and mechanical rooms and all of that. Overall, this building is at 59.5% efficient. So that means that that colorful band is 59.5% of the whole. That's really rather astounding. It's very efficient. And frankly, from what you heard about the impacts of escalation, it had to be. We've worked very hard, and Dean Fiala and the faculty have worked to make good choices about overlaid uses and simultaneous uses and really getting the value out of every square foot. So what's in the building? We'll see in a moment, but we have the clinic, which is a big component in supporting the community and the relationships between university and community. In terms of offices, we really are only looking at some administrative suites. There are touchdown spaces for faculty who are located elsewhere. The building is much more focused on student life, the quality of student experience, supporting student success, creating a community. The programs that are will be housed here are coming from varied and distinct locations throughout NIU's campus. This will be a new home for all. There is, as Dean Fiala noted, research and innovation spaces, both for technology and in direct support of faculty and student research. She focused on the anatomy labs. We have both traditional gross anatomy and we have virtual anatomy labs to support and help with distinct types of visualization. We have an array of simulation and immersive learning spaces that include, and we'll see some of this, bedside skills. We have assessment labs, high, low labs, comeback labs so that students can actually come back and practice these skills on their own time without having to dedicate the entire room to that use, and a series of other types of simulation. And of course, it's an academic building, so we have classrooms that are available not just to support the College of Health Sciences, but the general university community. And these are a variety of sizes that fit with the university's programming practices. Next slide, please. So to take a look at the site first, the site is at a rather prominent location for the campus, both because it's at the intersection of Lucinda and Annie Glidden, but because it's marks the transition from the traditional core campus to the West Campus and a distinctly different attitude and spacing between buildings. So it's transitional and it's a real opportunity to declare branding, reinforce branding, and set a tone for the future. What we find interesting about the project is that it's a small portion of the footprint of the current dormitory, which allows us to then use that land to support the carbon responsibility, sustainability, and initiatives of the university. The site can be allowed to be more natural. We can use the site for geothermal wells. We can go ahead and allow the PV panels to be located, all while critically steering student pedestrian traffic from all the residential areas that are north and west, both on campus and off campus, through the building to activate, to promote knowledge about the program, to sponsor some curiosity, and critically, to provide a funneled safe passage to the intersection of Annie Glidden and Lucinda so that students are not haphazardly crossing at various diagonals along or across either of those avenues. Next slide, please. And so I'm going to show these images. There are projections of the plan called axonometric, so you get some 3D sense of the organization. This is the ground floor. And the ground floor is really dedicated to community, both the university community and the broader DeKalb community. In teal green, we see the clinic. The clinic has a discrete entry and parking and an ease drop-off for patients who might have accessibility or mobility issues, and discrete entries for students or staff, faculty who are involved with the university and may want to come in and out. The yellow-orange tones are showing the general classrooms. These are a variety of sizes. We'll see how they're also operable and flexible in how they might accommodate. But primarily, you see a roughly L-shaped corridor that helps us to channel student pedestrian traffic so that they do arrive or depart the Lucinda-Annie Glidden intersection in a more controlled and safe fashion. Now, if this is the community floor, next slide, please. We have two floors then that are more strictly speaking dedicated to the support of the health sciences. At the bottom corner, this is at the intersection, there's a two-story space, and this two-story space is brightly announcing, loudly announcing the community, the combination, the transdisciplinary nature of this program. And it is highlighting the featured space, a visualization innovation studio. That's the round red object within the sort of pink carpet. The pink zones are for student-focused, socialized use. The red is part of the research component, a series of laboratory spaces, and then in the green, the skills and immersive learning environments are shown. And at the far upper left, you see the touchdown suites for staff and faculty. Each of these floors is also going to have a general purpose classroom that can more directly support all of the activities in each of the programs and provide breakout space for flexible use, scheduled use. Next floor, please. On the third floor, now you can see that that volume, the innovation studio, the circular object, is now in space. We'll see what that looks like in a moment. But you can see that all of the spaces, all of the labs, all of the simulation spaces, and the anatomy spaces are rather directly linked to one another and to that core central socialized center of the school, the hub. On this floor, we have essentially more expensive equipment, so we have a bit more security and a bit more articulation of those environments, more control is afforded. So therefore, the two anatomy labs are on this, the biomed lab and the MLS lab, along with a series of environments within the broader simulation suite. And we'll take a look at some of this in a moment. Next slide, please. So this is an animation that I will try to talk over. I took a photo of a sign that was announcing. Go ahead and start the animation any time, Tony. Thank you. And it is true. The building is coming. The building is obviously located on that prominent intersection. And as part of the projection of the building's image, the intent to create a transdisciplinary home, we wanted to feature that space prominently. So it's projecting outward toward the intersection and both university and broader community. Once inside, this is part of that university community floor. Here are a paired series of classrooms with operable partitions so that flexibility can be introduced and the size of the event or the intimacy of the class can be controlled. We just passed a cafe to allow supportive socialization within the building, and now rising to a stair that is bringing us through these doors into the more secure and defined home of the College of Health Sciences. That's the two-story featured studio that we'll pause in a moment. This is one of the bedside skills labs. And you can see what's happening in the room. It's both a practical environment with patient beds and head walls. The head walls are connected to programmable mannequins. Students have a chance for hands-on learning, practical experience, and also flexes then so that we can do prep, pre-brief, debrief, teach as a class, go back to the stations and try again. Let's continue the animation. But this is the principle of most of the immersive learning and simulation environments that we see. Each has its own prep, which we just passed by. This now is that featured space, the Innovation Studio. And we're going to pause here for a moment. This room has a 270-degree wraparound screen. The idea here is that it provides for advanced visualizations. It provides for data collection and communication in ways the traditional teaching facilities, we've dropped out. Fast forward. I promise I'm not driving. Well, we're now on the second floor. We're looking down at that primary communal hub, and we can see the upper level of the Innovation Studio, where student study carrels are provided, and where a breakout conferencing student group room is also located. There are soft seating and different types of seating for neurodiversity, a variety of different teaching styles, groupings, project-based. This level is a bit more individualized. It's remote from the rest. The lower level, which we sort of flew through, had a greater mix of seating types, soft seating, small tables, etc. As we go down the support corridor, this is where all the lab spaces and the student success, the touchdown space, for instance, are located, directly accessible from that hub, so the students can reach at off hours and continue to practice at each floor to support learning in a more traditional environment and not occupy the labs necessarily. We have standardized classrooms, which fortunately have lovely views and great northern orientation for good light. Overall, the building has been very, very compact, very efficient, really emphasizing the technology-enhanced facilities and how these impact student life and student learning. Thank you.
Thanks, Luis. Hopefully no one got motion sickness with that walkthrough. all right, so obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but obvious to me now, the question is, what happens next? So as of right now, the tentative schedule, I'm sorry, could we go to the next slide, Tony? Bye, Luis. Yeah. Slide 11. There we go. Okay. All right. So as of right now, the tentative schedule for moving forward is laid out on this slide. We'll be moving into design development meetings shortly, hoping to get several on the calendar before the holiday season is upon us, with a goal to finalize by the end of spring 2026. Following completion of that, construction documentation will then proceed spring through summer in preparation for contractor bidding, which will be managed by the CDB. Following bid reviews, award, contract execution, construction activities are anticipated to begin late 2026 with demolition and related activities, the first order business, followed by new construction activities likely to begin summer 27 and continue through to end of 28. A groundbreaking ceremony is preliminarily being discussed to coincide with beginning of demolition, timing for that to be firmed out as we get closer. But ultimately, our aim as of right now is for occupancy to begin spring semester 2029. Although that sounds like a long time away, for the many steps that need to happen in the meantime, this is a very tight schedule. But we have commitment from all sides to keep the momentum going at full speed. Next slide, please. So on the screen here, you can see a few still shots from the video that you just saw along the and then the exterior building rendering from the south of the site looking from Lucinda. Those images are also out in the hallway, so if you saw them coming in, that's what you're looking at right now. So with that, this concludes our presentation for today. And with that, let us know if you have any questions.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. I'll start by asking a question, then I'll open it up to the board. my math is not going to be perfect, but this seems to be a close to 100,000 square foot building being built for $100 million, so $1,000 a square foot. That seems high to me for commercial construction. Is that what the cost per square foot is these days for commercial construction?
Luis, you do this more than us. What do you want to speak to that?
Good question. There are some components to consider. The budget also includes the demolition of the existing Lincoln Hall. Mm. It also includes the regrading of the entire sort of city block of that site to create the conditions for this building. There are utility runs that are required to be rerouted, and there are some hazardous materials. All of those are costs external to a traditional project, and so adding to that bottom line. This also includes the initiatives for the PV, the photovoltaic panels, and the geothermal system, which are wells that are driven into the ground and then feeding the building's more advanced energy system. So those are all probably not something you see commercial buildings and across the board. Then there's the fact that this is the health technology center. You're combining both the added costs of laboratories and the traditional sort of health sciences, plus the super sort of enhancement of the high technology. So is it out of range with what we are seeing nationally across other universities? I'm actually sitting in one in New Jersey right now, and our budget is probably the same, but it's not as nearly as sophisticated a building. We have a much higher cost locally here because of the Northeast factor. But I'm afraid that post COVID and in a sort of tariff environment, yeah, we are seeing escalation. That's been part of the problem all along and part of the reason for the trimming that we did, the compactness to try to limit that cost. But yeah, this is not unusual, not unlike what we're seeing nationally across all campuses.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the explanation. Yeah. Okay, Montel?
I actually have two questions. One revolves around what did we lose when we lost about 40,000 square feet of building space? I know some of that's probably going to be that gray area that we talked about before, but what did we lose on the programmatic side? Can you expound?
Well, the specific program was not fleshed out at that time. So we were hoping for a bigger facility, but as we moved into programming to figure out what we truly needed, we certainly could have done with some more space, but we were just managed to maintain, be very efficient with what we are getting.
Okay, the second question I have for you is, as it relates to, Jesus, just slipped my mind. Forgive me, I'll come back.
It only gets
worse.
That's
okay. We will forgive.
No. You know what?
Practice forgiveness.
That's that.
Other questions?
That's that Medicare card.
The Medicare card. How about on this side, Eric?
Yeah. Thank you for the presentation. By the way, appreciate that. So as I was looking at slide 11, and it's 2021 for visioning, and then we think we occupy in 2029. So 8 years, is that common? Or why isn't it? I look at NICS, we started that, I think, in 2017. We're still holding our breath.
8 years.
So what, I mean, with that goes back to Dennis's question. The cost is, I mean, we could talk about COVID, we could talk about tariffs, we could talk about all that stuff. That's life, that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. If we continue to do this, we'll always be faced with this. So how do we get this process to move faster?
Well, we are moving faster now.
Yeah.
We have full commitment from the CDB. We have had
Is
challenges.
Is it the CDB?
I don't want to point any fingers at anyone. There's been a lot of factors, and I see John coming over here. He'll jump in too. But we have had challenges over the course of the project, absolutely 100%. And we had some pauses that were out of our control. But we have momentum now. We're moving into design development. I see us, if anything, speeding up at this point, but we definitely had some pauses. John, you want to say something as well?
We know we've had our challenges with state projects and the CDB process being a bit dogmatic and challenging to get through at times. And I will also point out that when we first got the appropriation for the project, that was right at the start of the pandemic, and that slowed everything down. So yes, this project was impacted by circumstances, some of it beyond everyone's control, but we are trying to get more discipline with our partner, with CDB, to say from this point forward, we've got to start marching more steadily to get to that point, because we really want to make this building available so we can start a semester right away and go right into teaching and not have a lag time of a full semester or 6 months or whatever. We want to be able to use it and get right into a semester. So.
Okay, I mean, I'm kind of looking at this because I see what's happened with NICS, and I see we're probably going to hear the same movie play out as well, because that's 2017, not a mathematician, but we're 8 years in on that. And yep. It's the same now. That was before COVID.
Yes, so. And I can't sit here or stand here and defend how the state projects are very dogmatic and bureaucratic. I think I've laid that criticism out there before with them. And we've been very critical of their processes at CDB, our partners. If you're listening, they are our partners, and we are working through that. But they've had their challenges to get through a very dynamic process that they see. They had a large construction program hit them all together, and we're just one piece of it. So we're trying to pitch our piece and make sure we get going along at the same time. I know it's challenging, yeah. And we're at the point, though, I keep on emphasizing, we're at the point where now we should just proceed through the design into the construction contracting and keep going. I don't see there being any other reason, and I'm emphasizing that with CDB, any other reason for a significant delay at this point. We should be able to march through the rest of the procurement process and get to the end.
I mean, time's money, and this has obviously cost us a lot more, and has taken away space because this has taken darn long.
And that played into our funding request for the state. That additional $24 million, we played that card heavily, and the state saw that.
Yeah, well, everybody in this room is a taxpayer, so we all paid for it. So, all right, thanks.
Trying to equate this to enrollment projections and what the future may hold. I mean, the original plan in this was 130,000 square foot. It's now at, 94,000? Thank you, 97,000. How many students can this facility, maximum number in the future, and I don't have the enrollment number for our College of Health and Human Services off the top of my head, but how much growth will this allow in our enrollment in this college going forward?
We are planning the spaces for enrollment at the particular program level so that our cohorts can be bigger. With audiology, speech language pathology, medical laboratory sciences, so we'll be able to get some more capacity there. The truth of the matter is this building won't be the end-all be-all for our college. We'll be we're spending a lot of time in Wirtz thinking about classroom space, additional labs. We've got some laboratories in the bottom floor of the Student Health Center. So this won't limit our enrollment. This will only expand our opportunities, but we will be refreshing other spaces in addition to this and having, most of our didactic classroom experiences will happen outside of this facility.
And if I may jump in as well, I want to remind the trustees that the building will also serve students in other colleges and programs. Because of the anatomy labs, there will be students in biology. Because of the biomedical engineering labs, there will be students from that college as well, which is one of the values of the Health Technology Center, is the opportunity to bring together students from different disciplines and different program areas to build that interprofessional education as well as the collaboration for research and outreach.
So you plan on keeping the facility that you're currently using up on Sycamore Road? I mean, is that going to continue to be used?
I don't believe that facility will be used, but we'll stay in Wirtz as well, which is where a lot of our program, a lot of our classes are taught in that facility right now.
That's a nice facility. I was in there not that long ago.
We're trying to spruce it up.
Yeah, no.
It is a good, it's good light, good light, good energy.
So what do we plan on doing with that facility then if the like nursing and audiology is going to vacate it?
I'll speak from my perspective that this is part of our right-sizing effort with the campus. So it's another opportunity for the campus to right-size and become more affordable for the future. And that's the goal of right-sizing in the first place. So not having any more buildings than what we really need.
So we would sell that building or?
Yes, sir.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Don't want to get ahead of myself, but yeah, we got to get out of it first. But yes.
Or the board, they would have to surplus
the
building.
The for sale sign's not up yet. I understand that. But okay, great. Thank you. Montel.
Forgive me for my lapse of memory before, but I wanted to ask about and kind of tie it into before about remote learning. I built high schools in the city of Chicago, and I know how these prices run. But from the communication standpoint, will this be a high-speed facility allowing fiber optic connections so that we could do both remote learning and teaching?
I believe that is the intent, yes.
I didn't hear you.
I believe that is the intent, yes. We're looking to make sure that we have state-of-the-art equipment in the new facility, and we're partnering with DOIT on that.
The question kind of raises when you saw that that screen that you guys showed before. I mean, that's ideal for doing, heck, you could go to Boston and have somebody teach right here in the center.
Okay, just for the sake of continuing to move this along, are there any last questions at all? If not, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Great job. Okay, we don't intend to go over any of the remaining items that are in your package for information only. But if you have any questions for George or anybody else as a part of the team, do you have any questions on agenda items 9B through E? Okay, those have been reviewed in the past, so I didn't anticipate any. Okay, with that, then we will move on to agenda item number 10. Are there any other matters that need to come before this committee? Hearing none, the next meeting of this committee will be on February 19th of 2026. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So made, Strum.
Is there a second?
Second, Wasowitz.